Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here with Krista Montella.
Hello.
Dan Natterman. We have some guests coming down. We're here at the back table at the Olive Tree Cafe, which is right above the Comedy Cellar. And so what's up, Dan? How was your week, Dan?
Well, I was in Vegas.
Was that better?
Was what better?
Was that better?
That intro.
Was that better?
Yeah, that was more reasonable, sure.
Okay, go ahead.
I was certainly a lot more reasonable than what you've done in the past.
Okay, go ahead.
I was doing a corporate gig. I don't know if we've talked much about corporate gigs on the show, but for the uninitiated, which I assume is most people listening, a corporate gig is when a comedian does a show for a corporation that he's not paid based on how many people are in the seats, but the corporation pays him whatever they pay him, and he does. It's a private show, and it usually pays pretty well. But it's very restrictive because...
You might even add to that people don't realize that the comedians don't really make much money in the clubs. Even at my club, which happens to be the highest paying club, the comedians don't make much money. So they have to go out to get other work in order to make ends meet.
Right.
And so they do certain private events, and corporate gigs are...
There's private events.
More and more, right?
I'm doing more corporate gigs because, as I may have mentioned, I don't know if I've discussed this, I can no longer do clubs psychologically. I just, maybe the day will come when I'll be able to go back to them. There's clubs generally, it's several days and many shows.
You mean like a headlining gig?
A headlining gig at a club. It's just too many shows and too stressful.
So there are chains of clubs. What are some of that span the country,
right? Well,
there's
chains and independent clubs.
Right, but like you can get booked at the improvs and you can do like 10 or 15 improvs around the country. Is that how it works?
I guess so, but again, I don't do many of those. They don't pay generally as well as a corporate gig, and it's more work. And I just can't do it. I've hit.
But you can do like the Laugh House in Saugerties from Wednesday to Saturday.
But Dan cannot go in any stage where he imagines that they are anti-Semitic.
No. Well,
it's true.
Saugerties.
Well,
he believes that outside of Manhattan, everybody looks at him like a Jew.
But wait, can you just explain?
Well, but that's only a small part of my
neuroses.
I just don't like being away for a long time. I don't even like doing corporate shows, but it's only one show. I do one show and I get the hell out of it.
What was the corporation?
It was an association of limo, taxi, and paratransit. You know what paratransit is?
No.
No.
Paratransit is transit for handicapped people.
Oh.
But my first joke was, because they like you to make a joke that's tailored to the particular organization. So I said, somebody told me paratransit. Why do parrots need their own transit? And then I...
parrots. Oh, I thought you said para.
It is para, but that's the joke. The joke is paratransit. Why do parrots... And then I did an imitation of a parrot saying, step on it.
Damn.
I thought it was cute.
Jesus
Well, it's
Christ.
Corny, but I thought
you run these things by me from time to time. I'm not a total idiot.
Well, I had, the point is I didn't say it was a good joke, but it was. I thought it'd be it's corny, and I thought it'd be good for a few chuckles. But anyway,
it wasn't.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, they laughed?
No, but they're wrong and you're wrong. It's a funny cornball joke.
You know what? I'm gonna wait for Pete Holmes because that they're wrong and you're wrong is something I want to talk about. But ahead,
normally,
continue.
Normally at these,
Gary
gigs.
Goldman. I had lunch today with Gary Goldman and he laughed. Now you could say Gary laughs at everything I said, and you'd probably be right. And he is biased in that regard.
Dan, that's a terrible joke.
So anyways, did it go from bad to worse? How was it?
No. Well, then I just did my regular shit that always works.
And
but the thing about a corporate gig is you can't do. Generally speaking, you got to be a little bit cleaner. Not squeaky
but
clean
you're not
necessarily.
A dirty comic. You're
no,
not...
but my joke about the uncle, the molesting uncle.
You can't do that?
I would hesitate to do that in that circumstance.
That would have been fine.
You could do it for like an FDNY.
He only says to be a good uncle, all you have to do is one thing.
Right.
Not molest you.
That's the premise, and then the joke's a little more
What happens at these gigs?
But that's not the best part of the joke. I just want to be clear. That's just the premise.
Are people like eating dinner
it's really about the whole joke. But go ahead.
No, it's not about the whole joke.
Oh, God, drop it.
Go ahead, Kristen.
Yeah, they were just finishing their dessert at the time. Now, it does depend. Sometimes there usually is a dinner. And
it's like a fundraiser of sorts.
Sometimes a fundraiser, sometimes a get-together. Sometimes it's just a reward for the employees because they've put in a good year and they've had a hell of a third quarter.
They get to see Dan Natterman.
All right.
Well, they get to see Dan Natterman unless they want to spend real money, and then they can see somebody with a name. I get paid what I get paid. For a nobody like me that's not particularly famous.
Who's the name of the guy who came second in America's Got Talent?
Tom Cotter.
For more money, they get Tom Cotter.
They get Tom for more money. For more money, they might get you know, they might get an Artie Lang, say, if they want to spend $20,000 maybe to
Pete,
40.
Pete Holmes is here, Dan.
How do you do, Pete? We're just finishing up a discussion. Now, we're talking about corporate gigs. Do you do corporate gigs?
I do corporate gigs.
And how do you find them? I know a lot of comedians, and I'm one of them.
It's mono anyway.
Find them a little bit stressful because you're not allowed to say whatever you want. You got to be a little cleaner, and you got to be a little more politically correct.
Whenever comedians talk about political gigs, corporate gigs, you want to be candid and say that they're horrible, but you also want to keep booking them. So I even as you were speaking, felt you'd be like, you know, they're a little bit difficult. They're a little tricky. You know, they're fucking terrible.
I don't think they're
nightmares.
Well, I don't think they're nightmares because it's one and done.
Tell them your opening joke. Tell them your opening joke.
Well, if you insist.
Yeah, tell them your opening
joke.
Sorry,
by the way, I did an impression of you in like 13 seconds of seeing you. I'm so sorry.
No, well, they say it's the sincerest form of flattery.
It is. You're such a type. You're Dan Natterman.
Speaking of imitation, Dan has a great parrot joke.
Thank you for giving. He's just giving away the punchline.
You learned nothing. No wonder she shouldn't be here.
You just said the tell the death by Bumba joke. You know when people do that?
Asshole.
It's about a parrot.
It's not going to make it any worse. Better.
I did it. The corporate gig I did was for an association of limo drivers, taxi drivers, and parrot transit. Do you know what parrot transit is?
Parrot transit.
No, that's the joke. Paratransit is transportation for handicapped people.
I didn't mean to see it coming. I literally thought you said paratransit.
But that was the joke. I got up on stage and I said, good to be here at the Limo, Taxi, and Paratransit Association. But I have a question. Why do parrots need their own transportation?
That's good.
Yeah,
why is that good? My grandmother could have said that.
No, that's true. And a computer would get it. That's really the problem that humans have with a joke like that, is a computer would understand it. Do you know what I mean?
I guess. I'm not sure
you
know what you mean by the
computer.
Thank you, no. Thank you. I couldn't have asked for a more vacant face from that. A computer understands wordplay. Load that into a fax machine, it would be like joke detected. You know what I mean? It would be like paratransit sounds like parrot transit. And humans typically don't like jokes like that, but I do.
There you go.
Humans typically don't, Dan. Yeah. You like
so it's good for a corporate gig of Xeroxes.
It's one of those jokes that's so corny it's good, all
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying. No, listen, I agree.
So Dan said when you were here, he said they're wrong and you're wrong.
No, they didn't laugh heartily at the joke and neither did know him, and I said they're wrong.
Well, no, I think here's the thing.
Not that
you
they're wrong, but
them.
I disagree.
Again, you're just trying to get booked for more corporates. They were wrong. Say it, Dan.
In my mind, they should have been more...
Those dirty bastards.
I have no problem with it. They were very nice.
I just did a corporate. Anytime I do a corporate, they always tell you to be PG, and I'm a fairly clean comedian, meaning I like to swear, but no joke I tell hinges on a joke or a body part or anything. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it should be easy to go up and clean it up, but then they don't like it. You're going up and you're just like, hey, energy drinks, those will wake you up, but they give you diarrhea, and like no one's laughing. Then the second you say ass or shit, they laugh. Literally, I went to a Christian college, and it's the same as performing for Christians. If you flirt with something kind of you're not supposed to do, they love it. It's the same thing as doing a corporate. So one person, one older person probably on the board, is like, Dan Natterman can do the gig, but I don't want him to say motherfucker. Right. But if you did... standing ovation. The response you wanted for parrot transit.
Right. That is true. But even then, you do have to be a little bit more clean and politically correct than at a club.
Can I get...
For sure.
I'm going to ask you a question because I was having a conversation with the people doing the Patrice O'Neill documentary, and it kind of touched on this in a way. How many times and how many different audiences can you tell a joke to, have it not succeed, and still say the joke is good? It's them. It's not. It's them.
I think there's no limit on that.
You know, I will throw a joke away after three times.
Oh,
because as a practical matter, I don't want to bomb. But there are some jokes that I think are good. That
your jokes are so good. I email you all the time, and I'll be like, I'm still that amazing joke you have about the
you
first
do?
Half of the. I did. Look at our. You fucking ass. I'm trying to bless you and remember your goodness.
No,
and
but
it goes
you don't
right
email me
you.
All the time. You
but
emailed me several years
every
ago.
Every time we've emailed, I'll include, Dan, I love that bit. I always think about that bit, and you'll be like, you know, I haven't done it. Probably because it didn't work two times, and I'm remembering it. You got to keep it alive.
But can a joke still be good if you can never get it to go over?
I think what you do is you shelve it. I think, you know, it's probably more interesting. I want to know more what Dan says, but I have jokes that you don't have the performance chops to pull off or the full realization of your persona to pull off. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. people don't know where it couches inside of your greater being. So you're just a guy saying a joke, like Parrot Transit. But then if you shelve it for 10 years and then you find the perfect place. Have you ever had that happen? Like a joke will return?
I've had jokes that do come back.
It's
I've
amazing.
I've also had jokes that,
like
that work. And then stop working for summer. That I can't not explain.
But that's when you retire that and you bring it back. There's this weird glimmer
no
in your eye.
But Noam is asking a philosophical question, which is, what the philosophical question being is what is the marker of a good joke? If it's not working, by definition, it's not a good joke.
No.
According to Noam. And
well, that's not what you're saying. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's his question.
It's not what I'm saying, but I think there is something to that, unless you can come up with a better explanation
but
for why it's
where?
Not going over.
You know what I mean? It's like, where? It's like, that's why I actually think your joke, Parrot Transit, I wish it had worked.
But I can only do it when I'm performing for Parrot Transit.
That's people. Right. So therefore, and that's one situation is a great joke. And then, like, you know, sometimes it's the wrong climate. Like, I think we go through phases. You see it in the movies. Like, oh, we're slanting towards female-driven stuff. Now it's like guy-driven stuff. Now it's like group stuff. I think audiences have that sort of sixth sense as well. And maybe it's time to shelve a joke and bring it back.
I will say, if nobody likes the joke, I guess it'll be hard to argue that it's a good joke.
I have seen comedians.
Well, can I finish a thought here?
I thought
I was going to make an analogy.
Okay, go ahead.
Most people under a certain age can't stomach Mozart. I know I can't, but I'm not going. I wouldn't dare say it was bad music. I can't listen to it. Can you, Pete Holmes?
I don't listen to Mozart. No, and I feel bad about it. But I don't like a lot of great things. I don't like the Beatles, but I'm with you. I don't think they're bad.
So I wouldn't have the temerity to say Mozart stinks. Because a lot of people do like Mozart.
But that's the thing, man, is some people, the joke that, like, I have a joke right now. I've been wondering if I would ever do it here. And it's a very silly joke. It's kind of like your Parrot Transit joke. And I do it all the time, sometimes on the road, and it just won't work. And it's about how unicorns should be called unihorns. They have no corn. They have one horn. It's a very silly joke. It's kind of like, I love it. No, I'm glad you laughed. It's my favorite joke, and I do it very incredulously. There's a lot of performance to it. And a lot of times it doesn't work. And I completely get it. Sometimes that wasn't what they needed in that moment. But it's like fucking. It's like you don't know what the right time is to switch up a thing. And it doesn't mean that that was the wrong move with your lover. It just means you didn't do it in the right order. Or it wasn't the right mood. Or the music was wrong. Or the opener was wrong.
I got a feeling that Parrot Transit joke is going to find its way into Pete Holmes' act.
I was hoping you were saying back into your act. I'm a good joke encourager. I like doing that for people. I'll be like, you have that bit, you got to bring it back.
What I was going to say, I see some comedians for years stick by the same joke, which I have yet to see get a laugh. And I don't understand what's going on in their brains. Like, why don't they drop that joke? When are they going to get it? Doesn't work.
Here's a funny one, right? An illustration. John Mulaney,
a perfect example. No.
Always bombing that guy. Yeah. Dear friend of mine, he had this bit about Donald Trump. And he always said that Donald Trump was like a hobo's idea of what a rich person was. He's like, when my number comes in, I'm going to have built tall buildings with my name written in gold. You know what I mean? It's like a cartoon. And there was this one line in there where he goes, I'm going to have fine golden hair. Never got a laugh. I saw him all over the city. Fine golden hair. Never laugh. Probably only did it 3 times, but I saw every time he did it. And I said to him, I was like, John, that's the line. That's the line that there's a hook to it. There's music to that line. I always caught myself remembering fine golden hair. So he was like, all right. He kind of sounds like you, but up an octave. He's like, all right, I'll do it. I'll keep doing it. He does it on Conan. Fine golden hair, all but an applause break. Like the biggest line of the routine. That's what I just talked about this with Attell and Todd Berry. We're products of our environment, but we have to be aware of other environments. If you're performing in the middle of like Gangbuster, you're following Louie and, you know, going here and you do my stupid fucking unicorn joke, might not be the hot and heavy approach that they need for that moment. But if you're doing a late night spot where it's kind of fun to be cute and you know what I mean? Like it's a little bit safer to be, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, for Christ's sakes. Nobody's drinking. They might enjoy fine golden hair a little bit more.
At this point, like, Donald Trump is not just a rich man. Like, Donald Trump is almost like what a hobo imagines a rich man to be. You know, it's like years ago, Trump was walking through an alley and he heard some guy just like, oh boy, as soon as my number comes in, I'm gonna put up tall buildings with my name on them. I'll have fine golden hair and a TV show where I fire people with my children. And Trump was like, that is how I will live my life. Thank you, hobo, for that life plan. I bet you when Donald Trump makes a decision, he thinks to himself, what would a cartoon rich person do? Put up billboards of my face everywhere. That's a good idea.
And sometimes, I would imagine in a longer form thing, the line can still be entertaining. Doesn't need a laugh
right.
to be memorable or part of the vibe of the whole
that
thing.
That is brilliant. That yeah. really is a big thing. I've had people come to see me, and I get off, and I'm like, Jesus, that was terrible. And a lot of times they'll say the same thing, which was, everyone was really enjoying it. But we want that. It's like, if you're enjoying it, make a fucking sound.
I used to have this argument with my musicians. I don't know if it'd be interesting. I isolate a band. And I would always have this internal idea of whether something was good or not. And sometimes that wouldn't always match like an applause meter reading of the audience. And I would get in fights with the musicians. Look, this really isn't good. I said, but they clapped.
Yeah.
They were clapping. And I said, well, you know, you can end any song with
ta-da.
Like this, with your hands out.
Yeah.
And they'll clap.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that all the shit that came before it was so good.
We know.
And sometimes people will truly enjoy something, and you just have to feel that they enjoyed it. You can't always measure it. And Dan actually gets upended sometimes when the audience doesn't laugh as loud as he wants them to. And I tell him, Dan, they loved you, you know?
Yeah, there is a point.
Wait a minute. Usually it's the opposite. I think they love me, and you were like, yeah, but Greer did better.
Well, Greer always does better. That's not mutually exclusive, Dan.
There's a comedic equivalent to what you're saying about music, which is the comedians that figure out the cadence and stuff. You know what I mean? Where you have a certain type of talking, and you know that I'm done. And people will laugh, and it's almost Pavlovian or something.
Yeah, my father used to hate that.
And then there's also what I call thank you very much humor, which is like where you tell, I'm sorry to keep saying parrot transit, but if you go, why do parrots need all their different types of transportation? Thank you very much. Thank you very much becomes the joke. It becomes the final chord in a song, and the humor comes in. That's what he prepared, and we're kind of delighted by that.
Pete Holmes' new show. By the way, do you know
Sean McCarthy? I'm the only one that calls him Sean L. I think that's funny.
Sean,
like he's a black guy.
Sean writes the comics comic.
That's not offensive,
correct.
Is it?
Sean, we'll get to him in a bit. Yeah,
that's what I was saying. And because you, he's, I think he thinks he's not allowed to chime in. You are allowed to chime in.
Well, I was waiting to be introduced.
So he writes the
Sean
comics
L.
comic,
McCarthy.
Which is a well-known website dedicated. He's a comedy nerd.
Yeah, journalist.
Journalist. Mm-hmm. And you went to Princeton, right?
For 4 years, yes.
And
I had no idea you went to Princeton.
Yes.
And suddenly impressed.
Game changer.
Which, for some reason, I was thinking, you know, certainly not Princeton. I don't know why.
Actually, to me, to be honest.
What air did I give off?
It's weirder to me that you went to Princeton.
Yeah.
Like obviously, if anybody comes out of Princeton, is quite marketable. You could be making a lot of money doing something.
And, well, true.
And I'm not saying you're destitute, but I don't think the comics is paying you the kind of money that you could have been making at any job that you could put Princeton on a resume. Correct.
Is that
but
true?
You'll love it.
Well, I was a newspaper reporter for about 15 years.
He was a newspaper man.
Because I graduated the final year that seemed like a viable career.
Which was
1993.
Opposite. You're the opposite of an outlier.
Yeah.
You're an inlier. You graduated right when it was the least relevant.
No, he means right when the internet began to overtake publishing.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
If I had graduated 2 years later, the web would have been a thing and I would have realized, oh, I should be doing that instead.
Right. Interesting. But, you know, there's still a way to do it. You do it online.
So that's what I'm doing.
Let's get more into that later and talk about Pete's show.
So anyway, but I do find it, so the whole, I'm going to get back to it, but the whole community of people who were in love with stand-up comedy and hang on every comedian, it fascinates me, and I don't get it at all. And I truly don't. Like people.
But you're thankful for it.
Yeah.
That's not the majority of the crowd that comes to the Comedy Cellar. 95% of the Comedy Cellar crowd are not what you're just describing. They're tourists.
No, that's not true.
I think that's changing.
That is not
true at all. And I was coming around.
Isn't it?
I don't do a poll when they come out of the door. But my sense is a lot of them are
maybe weekend
casual,
shows.
Guys, casual
but
comedy.
But I had an actual segue here, Dan. Actually,
yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So do you know?
Is it about Mozart?
But the guy who also was like that apparently growing up was Judd Apatow.
Now there's a segue.
Who at a young age was going around interviewing comedians, transcribing bits off TV, Saturday Night Live bits that he thought he might never be able to see them again. There was no VCRs, no anything like that,
sure.
right?
Sure. He was one of the pioneer comedy nerds.
So he's like a kindred spirit to you.
So if you have a movie pitch in the year 2030, please let me know.
Okay.
And now Judd is producing a new pilot for HBO featuring Pete Holmes.
That's right.
And I want to ask you about, guys, I want to tell you one thing that you don't know. So Judd Apatow was right here.
Yeah.
And Dan Natterman on his phone.
Yeah.
He Googles a picture and he says, Louis B. Mayer. Now that's a producer.
That's what you did this to this
man? Did you really do that?
He really did.
Yes, but.
Now that's a producer.
What I meant by that is that he was a big fat Jew with a cigar in his mouth. And to me, that's a producer.
That's a producer, he said. Anyway, so tell us.
You're
about,
going by the Looney Tunes standard.
I'm going by the standard of the stereotypical. Exactly. I'm making a motion picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Judd Apatow in his whole life has never said, I'm making a picture.
If the world were what your voice sounded like, he would act that way.
Right. It'd be
Judd Apatow was a very nice guy that never had the decency to have sex with a leading lady.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's so respectful of women.
He's a very sweet man, good
father.
I mean,
what the hell kind of producer is this guy anyway?
No, go ahead. How did the show come about and what's it about?
Well, he's married to a leading lady.
He is married to a leading lady.
Shut up, everybody.
Just the one.
But he's probably very respectful when he asked her out.
Next. how did the show come about?
I had a talk show on TBS, and it was canceled months before it was announced. So I knew it was going to be taken off. Yo, Scoop! Exclusive.
What was it called?
The Pete Holmes Show.
Oh, right.
I'm talking like you. It's just fun.
It is fun.
Every time I get nothing from you. Anyway, you give me nothing. Anyway, I had a show called The Pete Holmes Show. It was on after Conan. And it was wonderful. And we found out that we weren't coming back. We could talk about that. But anyway, we kind of hit the ground running. So before the show was even off the air, I had this other idea that I came up with around that time. I think the trauma of the show getting canceled actually fueled my creativity a little bit, where I was like, all right, well, what am I going to do now? So the show's still on the air. I think that's kind of a fun part of the story. I realized, what is, you know, cancer diagnosis? You only have 5 years to live. What is the show that you would really like to make?
Yeah, the cancer diagnosis is not, that's
you're
making
that. That's not the show.
Up.
I'm just saying.
That's
like,
the movie Funny People by
yeah,
Judd
Apatow. It's not cancer. It's a rare blood disease, but yes. Apatow nerd. But the idea, you know, what is the story? Everybody probably has one really great story that they're kind of made to tell. And I feel like mine was about being a religious kid, got married to the first person I ever dated, ever slept with, all that sort of stuff. Got married when I was 22.
Had sex with her before you got married?
We did. That's a good question. We did, but that was very kind of like hush-hush, you know what I mean? I will say the first time she went down on me, this is completely true, we knew we were going to get married. That was like our engagement blowjob. It's completely real. There was no ring. I'm telling you, she went down on me, and I swear I was like, I got to call a caterer. It sounds like a bit. We started looking for places because I was like, you don't do that unless you're going to marry the person.
How old are you?
I'm 36 now.
How old were you?
I was 22. When she blew me, I was probably 21.
And she was?
She was 23.
Oh, she's older than
you. Yeah, so a little bit older. She had actually been with other people. So anyway, we get married. 6 years later, very sweet, very safe, very like loving. We were good friends. People are always, I kind of get offended on behalf of my comedian brethren. People are always like, oh, she probably, because we got split, she probably left you because you were always out working the clubs and all that stuff. And it wasn't that at all. We just weren't quite right for each other. I was like a baby boy. You know what I mean? I was very naive, very, very sweet. So she ends up having an affair. And that's where the show starts.
With somebody you knew?
I did know the guy, yeah. She was a teacher, and she fell in love with this other teacher guy. So the show is a riff on these true events, but it's certainly different. I have to say that.
But it takes place in the comedy world.
But yeah, well, so here's the, if that's kind of the long explanation, but the short explanation is, I just got divorced. We're all playing kind of like regressed versions of ourselves, if it's convenient, meaning I'm an open micer. So my wife leaves me, and I'm living upstate. And once she leaves me, I have nowhere to stay, so every episode is me staying on the couch of a different comedian. So every episode would be like, Crashing, it's called Crashing. Dan Natterman would be like the name of the episode. You know what I'm saying?
And the comedians are going to play themselves?
Comedians play themselves. Everybody plays themselves.
Does it explore the world of stand-up?
Yeah, I actually think I'm pretty excited to think that we might be the first people to show that process of open micing to barking to bringers and to like paying your dues and your first road gigs and all that
stuff. I'm very glad,
by
the way, that this show is not being called Poems, because there's just too many damn shows with
puns.
The name of the comics. Louie, Marin, was it Mulaney? When
yeah,
he
it was
had his Mulaney.
Mulaney. And it was the Pete Holmes show. So you're absolutely right. This one's called Crashing.
Now, how many shows, now here's another question, is there's now so many shows about the world of stand-up comedy, different aspects of the world of stand-up comedy, but, you know, you had, well, Mulaney was about a stand-up comic.
Barely. Does anyone know that?
I don't know.
I'm not even fooling around with you. That show opened with him doing stand-up as himself in front of the set, and then it was loosely alluded to the fact that he did stand-up. He was a comedy writer on that show.
Okay. Well, then there's, but Louis is a comic, Marin is...
Louis is absolutely the number one... Like, when you pitched the show, and when I pitched the show, you basically had to tell people why it wasn't Louis.
Louis, yeah.
Yeah.
But how many shows about stand-ups can the public support? Or
I can answer that, Dan.
Yeah, go ahead.
As many as are funny.
Yeah.
Ah, good true. Answer.
How many sitcoms can we do about a married couple and their kids?
Yeah.
How many can people, they can stand as many as they work?
How many cop shows can we have?
How many shows about cops? That's right.
I don't think this show, comedy is in the background of this show. It really is about it's a coming of age story. I know people say that a lot, but I was a very, very naive person. And these characters that we're having on the show are actually the people that taught me a lot about not just comedy, but how to like be a grown person. So it's kind of fun and very surreal to cast some of those people in these roles.
I mean, it's a jumping off point that you're a comedian or whatever it is, but each show is special in its own way.
You want a job where you don't want to be like, why isn't he at work? You know what I mean? Like, and you don't want to see me just doing some mundane thing necessarily. I think people have a pretty big stomach for, like, Family Guy. Like, what does Peter Griffin do? You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. It's just a funny show.
So the show does it. The show puts comedy in the background, but comedians are in the foreground.
Absolutely. I would say first, you know, we haven't made it, so I kind of have to see what happens.
And that's actually unique. Like, you could have made Seinfeld not a comedian, taken out the seasons where he started with stand-up comedy, and the show would not have been one scintilla less effective.
I think he could have been a writer or something.
It helped
that they were in, you know, Costanza in the pilot was a stand-up as well.
Oh.
It's never referenced, but that was how it was written, yeah.
And isn't Gerard Carmichael's show, isn't Gerard a stand-up, but it's never referenced to?
I think
is that what it is? I watched two episodes. I don't know what he does.
Right.
Is it called Carmichael or Gerard?
It's called Carmichael Show.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
They really just, they've given
but
up.
But it's all about his home life.
Dan, it was
the
Lucille Ball show. It was the Jack Benny show. This is
Seinfeld,
not new.
Seinfeld, Cosby.
Yeah, but then there was a period where that stopped.
Wings.
And they've also given up on the TV theme song.
Mary Tyler Moore.
They've given up on
there's no time.
That's
there used to be more time.
The theme song used to be, great music.
Great music.
You remember the Dallas theme song?
That was not one of the great.
This is like when this is like when Chappelle does 2 hours on stage. Around the 90-minute mark, he just sits down, smokes a cigarette, and goes, "Remember theme songs?" And just have people sing one.
Does he have a theme song bit?
I've literally seen him go like, "What's your favorite cereal?" Talk about that for 20 minutes. I'm not shitting on
him.
It's hilarious.
Even his had Chappelle show.
But now a theme song, there's no theme song.
Yeah, there's no time.
They don't want to give up time. Louis for a while cut out the whole
one season
Comedy Cellar. No, more than one season. Cut out the whole Comedy Cellar intro to the show.
Yeah.
And I kind of actually felt that it was going to happen because it's usable time. Why does he want to devote it to it?
Well, if you look at The Simpsons, when The Simpsons came out in like 1994 or whatever it was, there was the long intro. There were the several gags.
Right.
There was the chalkboard gag, and there was, you know, the different things. And now, if you watch The Simpsons, just goes through the pee and Homer's running into the house.
Well,
because
it gives up time, but
they had more commercials already.
The Cheers theme song.
Fewer episodes in a season.
Yeah.
So
The Cheers theme song was a great song.
Cheers,
that really enhanced the brand.
Mary Tyler Moore was a great theme. A lot of great themes.
Oh, we agree. I think, you know, what we need to do is go back to your streaming idea where there is no, you know what I mean? Like, there's such an appeal to going to a streaming thing because you can have like a 33-minute episode because there's no syndication.
Just to get the theme song.
And you could have a 4-minute theme song. You could have Dan Natterman talking about theme songs for 5 minutes if you want.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, when it came out, Everybody raved about the theme song.
Yep. Well, Daredevil. Great opening sequence.
Shows that are on like HBO and stuff, they can have theme songs because there's no commercials. So you have, like Homeland has,
Game of Thrones.
Like a very Walking Dead. I mean, that has commercials. But, there are still some.
You got
True Detective was a great
one. True Detective, great one.
Sopranos. Sopranos had a great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you fast forward. Once you see the guy with the axe, you press play.
So where are we? You are correct. You've got a pilot. The pilot is being made. It's just they really don't have any idea if it's going to work or if it's not going to work.
Yeah, you hear stuff
and
like that.
I don't know that I would do any better. There was a TV movie about, I forgot what it was called, where they hired a monkey to decide whether the pilot gets picked up or not. Like, they found out a monkey, they put a monkey in front of the TV, and if he clapped really loud, they knew that they should pick it up.
Yikes.
I got to look that up.
And you think that's what it really was like? Sorry.
It's interesting,
though. I don't think it's that far off.
It's like when Malcolm Gladwell writes about the guy, there was a therapist that could predict whether or not people would get divorced with like an 80, 90% accuracy. He was like, but it's a 50-50 call. You know what I mean? So you're only doing... So the monkey is kind of going like, yeah, no. It probably is yeah, no.
I think there are certain people, just like, Ohio, is it Ohio? There's some states which are somehow have a certain sensibility which always seems to represent
bellwether.
The population.
They're bellwethers.
I think bellwether, they are. I think bellwether, I guess so. But
I don't know what it, if so, I said it made
so,
sense.
There are certain people who I believe, if it entertains them, they reverberate in a
Maybe
certain
an
way,
orangutan.
And they can kind of say, "Listen, if I like this, it's probably 80% of the country is going to like it."
Right,
and that's just find those people.
For the life of me, by the way, I can't find that TV pilot about the monkey.
Oh my
pilot.
God!
It might have been a false memory that was implanted by Mia Farrow.
By a monkey.
I was reading in
we lost you for 5 minutes just to come back.
I'm pretty sure that no, but I was trying to find that pilot. I'm pretty sure I didn't dream it.
I was reading. I think what you were thinking about was a stock market, picking stocks.
No, I'm pretty sure it was TV pilots. But if anybody knows what I'm talking about, feel free to tweet.
I was reading today in a Beatles book. Apparently, Brian Epstein, the guy, the Jew who discovered the Beatles.
Uh-huh.
Well, he owned record stores, and he would hear a song on the radio, and he would buy 1,000 copies of the record. When people who would work for him say, "What are you buying?" And they said that, reliably, any song that he liked would become a huge hit, and he quickly became the most successful record store in England.
That's sixth sense. That instinct.
But what else could it be except he liked that song?
But there has to Again, well, it's interesting. I wonder what you think as a club owner and having your hand in all this. There's an art to the watching and the appreciating and going, this guy feels right here and this person does. It's not just like, man, this guy's not getting laughs. You know what I mean?
I don't know. We were talking to Eddie. We were talking to Eddie Brill. Was it last week or two weeks ago? And he was talking about all the things that are going into choosing the comedian for the Letterman show. What's right for them? And I'm like. And I said, you could just put an applause meter down there. If you just booked the comedians who get the highest score on the applause meter, you probably would not do badly booking the Letterman show. I
can't say this
enough. I would like every one of them, but...
It's a little bit off topic. Late night television would change if people did what Leno did, and I did it on my talk show, and I believe Seth Meyers does it. And I believe I told Seth Meyers to do it. I don't know if it's why he did it, but I was like, if I can tell you one thing to do on your late night show, tell the band to take 5 before the comic comes out during the commercial break. There's a built-in time. If there's a stand-up, come out. And I used to do this speech, and I was like, hey, my friend Dan Aderman is on the show. He's going to come out. Please. It's going to be weird that another person is coming out and standing on my mark and telling jokes. It's going to seem like a foreign body and you're going to release antibodies and it's going to feel unnatural. He doesn't have time to win you over. Laugh at his first joke. Make him feel welcome. Make this the show that comedians want to come on. Go nuts like he's your favorite when he walks out. There wasn't a comedian that had a bad set on my show. So to your point, better than an applause meter, some sort of buffer. It's like the weirdest thing to airdrop into a late night show. You're talking to Bono, then you're talking to the guy, the new Blade, and then all of a sudden you're like, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Attell, like, what the fuck? And he doesn't come out to the couch, and he walks out, and there's, old ladies from Iowa City.
You are absolutely right.
Just tell them it's okay to laugh, and it's so much better. Watch Seth Meyers. I'm pretty sure Seth does it. Those comedians, I'm going to say it's 60% better than if no one did that.
Yeah.
And Leno, too. Ralphie May got huge standing ovations. I think it has something to do with the fact that Leno would come out and be like, hey, these guys are my friends and I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
couldn't pass that one up. Doing Natterman to Natterman. I hope, Jay, you're listening.
I think, you know, it's analogous. Sometimes some band will be doing a lot of rock songs, and then they just do a ballad, and it goes, but it's some, like, seasoned performer, like a Springsteen or something. He will set up a song. He'll come, he'll talk to the audience, yeah. explain it, and create an interest in the audience. An expectation.
That's
oh,
right.
let's perk up. Let's get on tippy toes, as
right.
it were,
right.
and pay attention to what's about to
it's
happen.
It's like a ball game if you know that the pitcher and the batter hate each other. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much more captivating. What? A little bit of a backstory.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like just make them want to make them, yeah. because otherwise they can tune it out or not pay attention. Yeah, I agree with you. But what's that?
Sean L. McCarthy.
Sean McCarthy. So listen, what about the Jeffrey Gurian Sean McCarthy feud? I want to know
Is
about
there
that.
One?
Is there one?
There better be. Isn't there one? don't you tread on the same turf?
But there's a few.
No.
Just to review, Sean.
Do you know Jeffrey Gurian?
I do.
Have you been interviewed by him or something?
I have.
I am extremely angry with that guy, but go ahead.
Well, maybe we should have
So you on. Have a feud.
Well, maybe we should have him on to discuss it.
No.
You have a feud and you want to
just to review, there's a feud.
Yeah, he wants you to give him a platform to discuss the feud.
Comedy doesn't have any really prestigious media. Like, you know, in the world of music, you have Spin, you have Rolling Stone.
Yeah, you said Billboard magazine.
Billboard magazine. Comedy has a patchwork of blogs and leaflets and pamphlets. And
right.
You know, when McCarthy is one of them. It's called The Comics Comic.
That was a great intro. It's like a hobo soup of bullshit.
Well, but, it is. It's not.
But he's the big boot in the middle.
But
I don't even think that's true. AV Club is huge. Who else? Yourself.
Well, what is AV Club? Is that? But that's not a comedy news
that's
outlet.
That's the Onion. That's the Onion.
The Onion's
Arts
Review.
And Entertainment.
Podmas.
Damn,
all
that
these
was
things.
Really funny.
Yeah.
In a world of flyers, he's a glossy one.
Well, I'm just saying, but it's true. We don't have a Rolling Stone. We don't have a Spin.
BuzzFeed.
Do we or do we not?
Yeah, BuzzFeed.
HuffPost Comedy.
Well, now we have every magazine website trots out its own variation on comedy.
HuffPost Comedy, yeah.
And what I was going to say, but nobody let me finish.
Oh, really?
Is that here to break the mold and bring comedy into respectability is Mr. Sean. I call him Red Fleece McCarthy.
One
time he wore a red fleece, and the whole night I was going... Red Fleece. Some say he still haunts these woods. I made him to a folk hero. But anyway.
Well, Dan, I want to let you finish, but you have to finish.
I'm finished.
Okay.
You bring up a very valid and personal point for me. When I moved here I was in Boston beforehand at the Boston Herald, and at the time in 2005.
A tabloid.
Both the Boston Herald tabloid and the Boston Globe broadsheet.
Doesn't fold in the middle.
Both the Globe and the Herald had weekly comedy columns. So it was a rare thing
WCCs.
To see the newspapers cover comedy on a weekly basis in the newspaper. When I moved to New York, there really wasn't any of the thing. And I went to Entertainment Weekly. I went to Comedy Central. I tried to plead a case to these people that comedy deserved to be covered the same way you covered up-and-coming bands.
Al-Qaeda.
The next hot band.
Other types of bombs.
Like, Entertainment Weekly is willing to go to all these film festivals and cover these independent films or these bands at South by Southwest.
I want to hear some stories about comedians now.
Okay.
And Jeffrey Gurian.
What do you want to know about Pete Holmes?
Well, first of all,
I was very impressed. If I could just finish my thought.
Oh, my God.
I know it's a little
what
bit.
What is this podcast?
You're right, Pete, and you're absolutely correct. You've
it's
hit upon something very
for
important.
Dan. That's what it is.
You know,
dance therapy session.
Unfortunately, democracy does not work in a podcasting context.
How can we help?
And
you
there do? Has to be a dictator.
How can Pete and I service you?
Well, I don't know that you can service me, but the thing is Sean McCarthy being friends with all the comics.
Sean L.
Sean L.
You know, he has a tendency maybe to be a little too nice in his articles, but he took.
It is hard to be mean.
It's hard to be mean, but he did face down. We had him on a show. What the hell is his name?
This is great.
Ari Shaffir.
Shaffir.
He fucking
because he was mean to that girl. Because
he was mean to that. Right. And
so
no
what happened? Tell us what happened. What happened with Ari Shaffir?
Yeah, in no uncertain terms, said Shaffir is a no goodnik.
Well, it was just unnecessary meanness and cruelty to lash out at another comedian in a special.
In a special,
tell
kind
people
of. What for no
know?
Reason, he had a bit where he was talking about a girl being a whore or something. And
ugly
then he said,
and
ugly fat.
Ugly fat.
Like, basically, if someone's an ugly fat whore, we don't have it quite right. And I'm talking like Natterman again. It's very contagious. But then he says her name for no reason. And Even if there is a joke, the joke is, I didn't have to say her name, but I did.
Right.
So then, of course, it was.
And you took him to
unkind.
Task?
Unkind.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was very unnecessary. And Comedy Central didn't have to air it. And
yeah, you know, at that point, you might even want to just cut it out.
Right.
You know
it's a 6-second edit.
Now, I want to ask a question. You compare comedy to music. What is it about stand-up comedy which makes you feel that it's an art form, like right up there with the Beatles and things like that?
You remind me of a talent, all these guys. You're one of those guys that's kind of like, I smell it everywhere, and I'm not buying it. Why? What makes this a... I'm going to go on stage in 20 minutes and be like, my dick has one eye. He's got no depth perception.
Exactly.
And you're in the back like, Picasso, you are not. So you're looking for it. You're looking, it's great.
Well, there is a subset of people like who is involved. Listen, he gave up Princeton to write about comedians.
Well, first of all, you're exaggerating. I know a lot of people that went to Yale, Princeton.
Just go with it,
Dan. Make a living. No, but what you're saying is patently false.
Fucking go with it.
Hamilton.
It's patently false. People that go to Princeton, if they don't, if they're majoring in liberal arts, they may not get any job.
But certainly plenty of my classmates went to Wall Street or
he could.
Yeah, if you want to go to Wall Street, sure, you can make money.
Dan, please, for the love of God, just shut up for a second, okay? he has an Ivy League degree.
Yeah, so do I. Couldn't do anything with it.
My first job out of Princeton.
And you love comedy so much,
right?
Obviously. And you live it, that you want to live and breathe it, and you hold the artists that you cover on the highest level with the great artists of every art, correct? Am I correct?
Comedians are saying the things that regular people wish they could say out loud. Or sometimes are unwilling to look at the world in
real
way.
You mean power transit? Not real people don't want to say that?
Some comedians.
But seriously, folks.
I mean, have you ever thought about this philosophically? Do you?
I would rather hang around comedians than civilians or regular people because
they don't like that when you say that.
Because comedians are willing to look at the world and talk about it.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I'm completely an art person. Absolutely. I think there's a deep art in dick jokes. I really do.
Well, a good dick joke, there would be, sure.
I think there's something unspoken, Freudian, terrifying, neurosis building. It's right. There's an undercurrent of all this stuff, dick. Envy and shit and women and inferiority. And when a good comedian gets up there and, like, tears that down with satire and with filth, I think that's gorgeous. I think that really is the stuff
it's
of art.
It's cathartic.
You know, this is my issue with it. I always think about this. Like, Beethoven's Symphony or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This exists on a page, and it's clearly genius, right? I mean, anybody knows. Like, nobody could do this. But what I do notice in stand-up comedy is that quite often it's not apparent that somebody is a genius until after they become famous. Like,
that's interesting.
I don't want to say any names, but there are people down there. Like we used to see them every day. Oh, they're funny. Not like we thought they sucked. And then all of a sudden,
right,
they become huge. And in retrospect, oh, they're geniuses. But if they're geniuses like a Beethoven, why? Like when you see real genius in music or in a painting,
those are prodigies.
So
those are prodigies.
Is there any comedian that you feel that you could take their act, show it to someone who's never heard of them, and somebody could identify? No, that's special. That's genius. That's as different from everyone else's comedy. Pryor's one.
For sure.
Are there others?
Chappelle.
I think, and Chappelle is like he's one of our Beethovens.
Can you separate Chappelle's persona from his material?
I think so. I think you can see it. There's a shimmer that certain people have. And I used to hate when people said that because I would bark at the Boston. Remember the Boston?
Yeah.
People would always come around and be like, this is where Chappelle started. You could just tell. You could just tell. And I was there and I thought I was great. Nobody was saying that I was great. And I was like, you motherfuckers. You're all going to say that shit when I blow up.
I have to say that Chappelle was one of the biggest impacts the first time he took the stage. I mean, he was like 19 when he first came down here.
Yeah.
And everybody was buzzing
about it. So
he'd
been doing it for 10 years.
Probably. So Chappelle is a good example.
Yeah.
And sometimes asking questions, not because I don't want the question to for you to infer any meaning.
You know what I think? I mean, who I think is, you know, if there is genius in stand-up, and I don't know if there is, but I think that Rick Shapiro approaches it. And he was downstairs the last time he was here, and he couldn't buy a laugh.
Well,
there's an example of somebody that couldn't buy a laugh here, and yet I think is brilliant. What do you think of Rick Shapiro?
I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen Rick enough to comment on that, but right. I do think...
What does the comics come, I think, of Rick Shapiro?
I haven't seen Rick in years.
We've seen his dick.
Somebody with a slight mental illness who has the good sense to do it on stage, I wouldn't call that genius.
Well, you know, you look at it as mental illness, but you don't get it.
And most doctors would agree.
He might be mentally ill.
Slight. But
there's brilliance to what he's saying, and it's completely unique and different.
Yes, it is unique and different.
And I think it's real art.
You're talking about fine art, too. Sorry to interrupt, but I really think we're making a distinction. When you look at an abstract painting, which is probably a little bit more like what stand-up is, you know, and then you look at something that's like photorealistic, it's very easy, and I'm with you, to say, well, this one is clearly art. Anyone would agree. You could take a time-traveling caveman and show it to him, and he'd be like, oh, my God, that is impossible to do. How did you do that? But difficulty, this is why people don't like photography. You know what I mean? I take a photo of you and I put a nice filter on it and it looks gorgeous. Is that art? We don't like it because I just pushed a button. Right. But stand-up is also kind of in one of those ethereal areas where I'm really just going up and speaking and saying these things that I've prepared on one level. But on another level, and as a musician, I think you can appreciate, you're building, and I shouldn't be talking this way beforehand. It's actually a superstition of mine. I'm going to bomb tonight. Where you're trying to build an experience. It's a little bit like... lovemaking. You're feeling that energy and you're giving your energy and there's this flow and a group of people become an audience and a performer and an audience become a show, and that is a really difficult thing to do. I know so many genius, great writers that can't do it as stand-ups. I know stand-ups that don't have any discernible jokes. They're kind of like our Pollocks that can destroy. I've seen Godfrey downstairs just bullshitting and destroying because he has this weird X factor going on. You know what I'm saying? So I think we need to get... Or maybe one option is to get a little bit looser in how we define art, because it doesn't have to be the perfect comedian that goes up one-liner, knocks them on their asses, musical cue, rips off the costume, you know, like, holy shit, that was Blue Man Group, you know what I mean? That's easier to say that was a work of art, but I really think that, you know, great comedy can be art.
So I have an iTelephone. I have an iTelephone. Thank you. Which means I have Google on my phone. I'm guessing a lot of you do. I have Google on my phone now. And it's ruining our lives. I don't know if you've noticed, it's ruining life. Because we know everything. But we're not a lick smarter for it. We just know. You don't know something? Wait 2 seconds. You will know. Having Google on your phone is like having a drunk know-it-all in your pocket. There's no time for mystery or wonder. You're just like, how do they make glass? And you know. But the time between not knowing and knowing is so brief that knowing feels exactly like not knowing. So life is meaningless. I've literally been in bed in the morning alone, just like, where's Tom Petty from? But I feel nothing, because there was no time to not know. Listen to me. There was a time, and I don't mean to get all Andy Rooney on ya, but there was a time that if you didn't know where Tom Petty was from, you just didn't know. And you felt that yearning and that deficit in your being. And you'd go around and ask actual people. Like, where's Tom Petty from? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And now I'm impregnated with wonder. And then they go and ask people. Until one fateful day, you see a girl wearing a Heartbreakers t-shirt. You rush up to her and you're like, hey, where's Tom Petty from? And she tells you, Florida. And a wave of endorphins and pleasure and meaning would wash over you. And you felt something. And that's how you met your wife. Do you understand? Your wedding song was Refugee. Thank you very much, everybody. Good night. Thank you.
I think it clearly is art. I just find it a hard field to really determine who are the... If genius is a kind of an outlier in a population, who are the Michael Jordan? It seems hard because you can only be able to tell in retrospect. Like, we always knew Louis was a great comic, but we didn't realize he was a genius until he was writing screenplays and characters and subtle things and coming
but
around.
But then also,
you know,
Louis adapted and changed. Like, Amy is an amazing comedian, but she's the same comedian she was 10 years ago, and that's to say she was great 10 years ago. So what happened? A lot of things happened. What a resurgence of interest in feminism, or
what I think she's trying. What I think Noam is trying to say is, is there a Beatles in stand-up comedy? Is there a Rolling Stones?
Yeah, but what happened?
People
with
that are so head and shoulders, like, so,
like, what
the, the Beatles have 100 hits, and the
Woody Allen writing Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Yeah.
That I get it. Like, that, who could do that?
But I'm also, but what I'm saying is, there's a time and a place and a season for these things. So Woody Allen or the Beatles doing those things in that time, in that place. My point about Amy was, she was doing this type of act 10 years ago.
But no one's going to compare.
Can I tell you the other problem?
And then the zeitgeist catches up, and then we find our person to hang it on.
I'm going
to
tell you another problem, and this might be my own thing. We all have friends that crack us up. Crack us up more than, like, we could be hysterical laughing at just some friend of ours who's being hysterically funny. So you it seems ordinary, like, so you don't respect the ability to make you laugh
but
in the same way. I don't have a friend who can sing like Stevie Wonder who's never done it before. Like,
but that's what Robert Klein said, is a great quote. He goes, there's a big difference between being funny in the, like, with your friends, or being funny at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
But
well,
you
that's
know
performance.
What?
Having hung out with a lot of comedians and a lot of non-comedians, the good comedians can entertain you off stage in a way that no non-comedian can touch. I've never seen a non-comedian that is anywhere near as entertaining as Tracy Morgan off stage,
well,
for example.
Now you're talking about outliers again.
Even Sherrod Small, off stage.
I think the
Keith Robinson off stage. Let's go down the list. There's some people that aren't that entertaining. I'll get to the white people. Well, I would mention myself, but you say it was self-serving.
That was clever, Dan.
You know, but Kevin Brannon is a lot of fun. David Tell off stage is great.
David Tell
off stage is tremendous.
I love David Tell, but who spent more than 90 seconds with him on stage?
But the hell of a 90 seconds.
Before where he gets uncomfortable
and
walks
away.
You know,
my non-comedian friends, nobody can touch people that I've just mentioned.
But
off
again,
stage.
You're speaking to what Pete is saying about you're in a certain environment when you hang out with them. It's the energy, and hanging out with people at this table. The reason why this show is the show it is.
I hang out with Dub Davidoff anywhere, and I'm going to get entertained.
All right.
I hang out with Tracy Morgan.
You are such a weird man. I really enjoy it.
Why is that weird?
And now you've just said why there's...
I didn't think what you said was weird. I just really... And I do mean it when I say I enjoyed it. You're like, I'm going to get entertained. Like, legitimately a little angry.
Well, I have something, don't I, Pete? That's unique.
Can you ask Judd just one favor? Put Dan, give him a part.
No fooling. He loves you, and he goes, Natterman's great because you just don't. Where do you see that guy? Natterman's been read, and we don't even know if we're going to use Natterman. You're great.
Oh my God, you would make me so happy. My heart would soar a hawk if you could use Dan Natterman.
But Judd was like, you never see that guy, and it had nothing to do with your audition or not your audition. He's always been interested. I can't say about the pilot, but I know he loves you.
That's appreciated.
Did he tell you that when Judd was on the show, Dan got mad, had a hissy fit, and walked off the show?
Yeah, because Judd
told me
that. Correct.
That.
Just to review,
Dan, because you weren't there. Answer.
Did Judd bring that up?
I believe he did mention that to me when I told him I was doing it.
Here was the thing,
and he said he thought it was a bit. That's why he told me.
Here's the thing. This is what happened.
Noam
regards this radio show as maybe his 30th priority. He's got his family. He's got his businesses. A million other things. I can't get him to return an email. So I book the show. I ask Judd to be on the show, and
sure.
I put it all together. Now, granted, I'd never get within 100 miles of Judd if it weren't for this club, but I did ask him. He comes, and all of a sudden, Noam is all of a sudden interested in being at the forefront. You know, the whole week I can't get him on the phone.
I get it.
Then he gets to the show. Then he gets to the show, and he wants to conduct the interview.
I get it.
If anybody wants... I want to say this about Dan.
Well, can I conduct the interview? I've been wanting to put the whole thing together.
Some people are not self-aware, and I think that if anybody were to listen to the recording of what Dan is describing, they would not see it the way Dan sees it.
This is a magical day.
Didn't see you the whole week not answering emails, saying I can't be there because my kids are in.
Doesn't matter if I answer the email or not. Point is, the show was going well.
On the day.
The show was going well. It could have gone. The show would go that much better
If you had to,
if I,
well, Judd thought it was a bit. It's fine.
You didn't think it was a bit.
The point is, I'm trying to ask Judd one question. Noam's trying to ask Judd another question.
Okay, but there's a concept of being a professional. Who walks off a show? You had a show. It's Were you allowed to walk off when somebody aggravated you?
It's the only power I have.
That's no power. We went on famously without you, but we missed you. I wanted you there.
You're like Bieber.
Well, it's the
Bieber
as I said. Unfortunately, it's
horrible.
But then you got to have the whole interview.
Again, the Patrice, like Patrice, is so was such a respected comic, and such a funny comic. But the things he would do, you know, I couldn't respect it, like walking off and taking.
He'd walk off stage.
If he didn't, did he actually walk off? He did worse than walk off. If he decided it wasn't going well, he would just take a flamethrower to the crowd. Sometimes his version of walking off was staying on, you know, for a half an hour, and. You know, it disrespected the other comics, disrespected the audience. Some guy who's waiting all week to spend money and take his girl out to see a show, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And somehow it gets remembered as this genius thing, you know? And it's respected in some way. It shouldn't be respected.
I see a frustration in you,
Noam. It's an awesome story.
I see a frustration in you, not just for comedians, but maybe just with reality and the way that memory works and the way that time changes things. And it's a very...
It's called truth, Pete.
No, I hear
you. Truth.
I understand. Like, it bothers people the way that the social mind shapes and catapults some people and erases memories. And it's very disturbing. What do we have if we don't have the truth?
Comedians would see this guy torch the room and say, oh, isn't he famous?
Isn't he great?
He's a genius.
What would comedians say? I don't even know about the incident you're talking about.
You talk to Jim Norton about Patrice.
Yeah,
you can't get him to say a bad
Jim
word.
Jim and Patrice were the very, very best of friends.
I have best friends. You're a good friend of mine. I'm not afraid to criticize. Like, you can't...
I don't hear a general... When I hear people talk about Patrice and how great he is, I don't hear people saying he's great because he walked off stage or did this or did... I hear he's great because they love his bit about... getting a receipt when he buys a donut just in case somebody gets raped in the neighborhood.
Patrice had great material.
You know, I don't hear people saying Patrice was great because of that incident you're describing.
No.
I don't hear it.
No, they kind of admired the rogue persona. And I don't like to see any entertainer in any genre become untethered from a respect to the audience and trying to please an audience.
We were just talking
about
that.
No shame in that.
With Bill Hicks, too. Attell did my podcast, and I was telling him that I get very uncomfortable when I watch those old clips of Hicks. Another guy... people won't criticize. I don't really know Patrice's stuff or that folklore about him, but I would watch the clips of Bill Hicks and he'd just call a woman a cunt 45 times, and that was like what he did. And I was like, Bill, baby, you might be on the road too much.
Yeah, but
bring it in.
What comics are praising this?
Hug your friend.
Yes, my mother. And you suck. You fucking cunt. Get the fuck out of here right now. Get out. Fuck you. Fuck you, you idiot. You're everything that America should be flushed down the toilet, you fucking turd. Fuck you. Get out. Get out, you fucking drunk bitch. Take her out. Take her fucking out. Take her to somewhere that's good. Go see fucking Madonna, you fucking idiot piece of shit. You suck, buddy. You suck. I can yell at the comedian because I'm a drunk cunt. That gives me carte blanche. I got a cunt and a drunk. I can do anything I want. I don't have a cock. I can yell at performers because I'm a fucking idiot because I got a cunt.
Do you want to hear the Jeffrey Gurian story?
Yeah.
So,
story time.
I read in the what's his website called?
Sandpaper Suit. I'm just kidding.
He has a website called Comedy Matters, but he writes a weekly column for the Interrobang.
Okay, well, I don't know which one it was, actually. Now, I didn't realize that. So he writes that, so Noam Dwarman sponsored comedian Jeff Leach to come over here to become an American, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
And
I read that.
And I was, first of all, it's not true. There's some grain of truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really upset that it doesn't look good. And I felt it was my personal business. And I said, listen, that's really not true. Can you just take it out? And he starts, like, sparring with me. Well, what is the truth? I'm like, the truth is none of your business. I'll just take it out. And I didn't say it, but implicitly is like, you come here. Don't think you're ever fucking walking in here again if you want to start. It's not even important. You're not a journalist. And I don't like it. So, I mean, it's not like he uncovered a Watergate conspiracy. I'm not taking it out. I have an obligation. This is not. It's my personal. So instead of taking it out, this is what he prints a retraction, meaning like we said that Noam Dorman sponsored Jeff Leach, but Noam called me and told me it's not true. So instead of just having it disappear, he compounded it by making it public that I was upset about it and asked him to take it out.
What?
He's dead to me.
I don't see what's so bad about the retraction.
What happened to the empathy?
You don't see what's bad about the retraction? Because, whatever. Because, as I'm telling it, I realize you have to be in my shoes to understand this. I don't want my personal... This is really business. This is not about comedy. This is my personal business interaction with comics. I don't want a guy coming in here... Supposedly, as a favored person in the club, shaking hands, talking to the comics, coming to the comedian table, writing about my personal business, start questioning the comedians, getting them to answer something, and writing it in his column. If he can do that, all he wants as a journalist means no relationship with me, no relationship with the place. Like Jason Zinnemann.
Right.
When Jason Zinnemann walks in, I have no illusions that he's here as anything as his
own. He's here for the story.
He should have a fedora with the note card in it that says press.
No, he's his own.
I do kind of wish that we did have the fedoras with the, press card.
And that's why I'm always cautious about you. But I've grown to like you a little bit more. No,
cautious.
Honestly, I always use I don't
cautiously because, optimistic
because I don't like the. I don't like an outside ear. I would like to know that whatever I say, whatever anybody says in here, whatever business I do here, stays here. I don't want some jackass coming in and writing it, and now everybody who Googles me, this becomes information.
That's
I don't like
it. That's the comedy mafia thing. There really is like that hierarchy, and you're like, this is the back table. You don't do that at the cellar. That's a maid guy.
Or,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm saying that's the attitude is people want to be like, this is sacred.
I don't feel made fun of, but the day that he comes in here, he's sitting close to the table at at my pleasure, right? I'm allowing you to do it. I don't mean that to sound haughty, but you know what I'm saying? And next day you go home and write something which puts me or the place or any of the comedians who work here in a bad light. You're not getting in the place again. You can write whatever you want and you can go see them wherever you want, but I'm not going to facilitate it. And I feel like
I don't understand what he said that was so bad.
It's what's bad. Is
now you're blowing it up.
Well, you know what
you're
it
making
is?
It more of a thing.
I'm going to tell you.
I honestly mean I don't think I understood. I might have tuned
I'm
out a little bit.
I'm going to tell you off the air why it's so bad, and then you'll understand.
I know Jeffrey, and for what it's worth, he's a sweet guy.
I can't speak for him. What I can tell you just from my own observance of it is what
word.
He does. My observations.
I always liked
my
him.
My observations.
I always liked him.
Is that what he does is he files this weekly column. It's more of a names and faces thing that you would see in the old tabloid newspapers.
Yeah,
where
like
it's
that,
kind
who
of
was around.
Half gossipy, like, oh, I... Sightings, seen and heard.
Right,
this
right,
is
right.
what I saw. This is what I heard.
Right.
Where it's like a first person gossipy,
like
thing.
The gossip column in the Lucille Ball show, that,
or Walter Winchell, or
something like that. Yeah, Walter Winchell.
So that's what he does. He goes, oh, I was here. I saw this. I saw so and so, and then he gets a picture with himself in the picture.
That. Yeah, that doesn't bother me.
But that's his approach.
He Nortons it.
My approach is I approach comedy as a beat, just like my first newspaper job was in Twin Falls, Idaho. For the Times News daily newspaper, I covered City Hall and the County Courthouse.
How did Ted Baxter used to begin his backstory? It all began in a tube sour station, in a 20-watt station.
But every day I went to City Hall and the County Courthouse. Whether or not there was a story to be had, I made the rounds every day just to make the rounds, to press the flesh, to be embedded in the community, to know what's going on. So when something does happen, you and I have a relationship. That's based on
it's
trust.
Like season 5 of The Wire.
I'm not here to report on the day to day, the night to night.
But
it is interesting.
Go ahead.
If you said something, I would wonder where your line is though. Like, just as a question of like, if we were in a journalism class, here you are pressing flesh, and it's nice that we're friends, and I like telling you stuff for your column. But what if I did say like, this is complete farce right now? I think Bill Cosby had a right to attack women, or whatever it was, something really scandalous. And what if I meant that? Where is the line? Where is our friendship go? Sorry, that's too good. I got to report on what a piece of shit Pete is.
I feel like there's a segment of the comedian population who approaches me warily because they think that anything they say
can and will
be used against them in a court of public opinion. But really, it's more the reverse. If something newsworthy happens, I will tell you, oh, this is a thing. I need to write about this.
Right.
And then the conversation happens.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it. I mean, no, I'm really not, because and I'm not faulting you. Your allegiance is to yourself first. If something happens down here, mm-hmm. which is really a scoop,
right.
and you're the guy who witnessed it,
you right. do have a responsibility to scoop it.
I am not going to be able to convince you
not to
not reveal it.
Right. It's happened before.
What do you mean? Has he stopped you before?
No, it's happened before that I've been here and witnessed things and then reported on them.
Right, but they may have been okay. I'm just saying, if something negative that puts somebody in a bad light.
Oh, well, that's...
And that worries me.
Well, that hasn't happened.
Your presence here is
you really are old school, man.
Your presence here is a constant worry for me, because you could hurt me and you really can help me.
Oh, he can help you a great deal.
No, he can't help me. Well, how can he help me a great deal?
Well, when Jon Stewart was here, he can write that Jon Stewart was here.
Oh, yeah. No, that word wasn't going to get out without Sean McCarthy.
Well, he'll help it get out even more.
No, and I don't even need the word to get out. The word gets out. Every customer goes home and tweets it. The word, the Huffington Post covered it. Everybody covered it. But, I've kind of grown to like you.
But I can tell the truth of what happened instead of any numbnuts with a Twitter account.
Yeah,
what happens.
If the truth is not bad, I'm just saying something could happen. When, let's say, Amy Schumer and Jennifer Lawrence get in a big cat fight at the table, and you hear the whole thing. And you got a really hot story. You can make thousands of dollars from it. Maybe you even recorded it. I don't know. You know, if you weren't here, nobody would ever hear about it, you know?
If that's what I was doing...
You're going to stand up and lock the door and go, now yous can't leave.
Exactly. If that was...
You're going to break his cell phone like Sonny broke the camera in The Godfather.
If that was
throw $20 at your feet.
If that was my M.O., if that was my M.O., I wouldn't still be a one-man web operation.
It's not an M.O. I'm not criticizing you. It's what you do.
Are you
for
saying
a
you'd be further ahead if you would each other?
Right. I wouldn't be a lone
journalist.
Well,
that's why you're fun. You're a calming presence. You're on the side of comedy.
I've established a reputation.
And you're very bribable. I've said
something. And he was talking to a hot girl the other night.
Oh, shit.
I have to go.
We all have to go. Special thanks to Pete Holmes.
yeah, let's end on that note. I was talking to a hot girl.
And soon to be available on podcast, I believe, Noam.
Yes, and Sean McCarthy and Dan Natterman. When are you shooting up?
November 16th, we start shooting.
Very
exciting.
Well,
we yeah, and special thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you very, very much for shooting it at the Underground. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Noam.